Welcome to Plant Stories.
The modern, the old, and the crazy in between.
Winston Churchill once declared, "The gin and tonic drink has saved more Englishmen's lives and minds than all the doctors in the empire." That brings us into today's episode, gin. Doesn't have a lot of syllables to announce with.
I know, it's a little bit, like, less fun. I wish it was, like, gin and tonic, but gin is its own thing, separate from tonic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know what else to say to that.
But there are different kinds of gin that I could use, but that doesn't mean the same thing.
It's true. So, gin is a clear alcoholic spirit that is derived from grain alcohol and flavored with juniper berries and other botanicals. Typically, the spirit is around 80 to 94 proof, which is like 40 to 47% alcohol by volume. So, the interesting thing is, gin is kind of almost the same as every other alcohol. Like, it could a few extra steps in a different direction, and it could easily be like whiskey or vodka or many of the other distilled beverages that we've talked about. In fact, there is a type of brandy that is made with juniper berries.
Hmm.
So it's really just that after the initial distillation, they usually do a very basic kind of like flavorless distillation in America and England, and then in Holland, or like the Dutch way of doing it, they make like a kind of like beer malt. And then in the second distillation, they add all the juniper and flavorings. So they try to make something a little milder than what we know those other spirits to be, and then ramp it up with the juniper to give it that kick. There is, of course, you know, like a regular process for it that is typical, and most of what changes between different types of gin is the other botanicals that are added to it. But I just think it's interesting that this is very much the base, could almost be anything in a way. Like, it's just like a tiny tweak of the adding of this juniper that like sets this drink completely apart from other alcohols. So dry gins are usually the gins from America or England, London dry gin being the most popular dry gin, and they have a lot more added flavoring than Dutch gins.
That's what I'm drinking right now, a London dry gin.
Yes, very typical. And the word gin actually comes from the Dutch word for juniper, which is Genever. I think of it as like Geneva, but that's actually in Switzerland, but it's, yeah, it's the Dutch word for juniper. And there is actually a drink called Geneva that still exists in some of kind of like the lower countries, so some of those places around Holland. And it's similar to gin, but it's always made with like a very particular malt. And so it doesn't technically qualify as gin to the general public. And also, like many, many of the beverages we've discussed, it originates from a medicinal beverage. I know you're shocked. Flabbergasted. But it's true. This one, in a couple different sources, but most notably by Britannica. I love Britannica as an encyclopedia. I don't know why. To Francis or Franciscus Silvius, who was a professor of medicine at the University of Leiden in Holland in the 1600s. And he thought by mixing the berries with alcohol, he could produce an inexpensive tonic that would be as effective as juniper berry oil for use as a diuretic. There are earlier mentions of gin or of a like gin-like precursor. Because you have to remember these earlier medicinal beverages, it wasn't like they were just like, oh, gin, and then this is what it is now. You know, it's changed since then. The recipes have changed, but there are earlier mentions of gin that possibly exists in the writings of a Belgian theologian named Thomas on Cantimpre, who wrote Liber de Natura Rerum, which was written in the 1200s and then translated by a Dutch contemporary in 1266. So Franciscus may have gotten the idea to kind of perfect something from that book. Maybe he didn't. I mean, juniper berries and the oil was being used medicinally at that time. So, you know, there's some, you know, discontent, I guess, but it's usually attributed to Franciscus Silvius, at least as far as like the modern gin idea goes. Most gin and similar recipes include quite a variety of other botanical herbs. So, you know, including but not limited to stuff like angelica, licorice roots, lemon and orange peels, cassia bark, caraway, coriander, cardamom, anise, and fennel. And kind of, like I said, this is the thing that differentiates gins, really. Dutch gins are typically considered too distinctive in taste to combine with other beverages. Like, they just, you wouldn't have like a gin and Coke kind of deal. I don't know. That actually sounds terrible regardless, but most Dutch gins are had on their own. The flavor is strong, doesn't mix well with other stuff. Either you like it or you don't, and you drink it alone. And then American English gins are used more commonly in cocktails like the gin and tonic and the martini, which was actually originally made with gin.
Mm-hmm.
So all you people drinking martinis with vodkas are wrong. No, I'm just kidding. It's totally fine. Drink whatever you want. But it is true that the original recipe was made with gin. Just to give us a little more background on this beautiful plant that contributes so much to this alcoholic beverage. Junipers in general are coniferous trees and shrubs in the cypress family, which is also the Cuperaceae family. And there is somewhere between like 50 and 70 species spread throughout the northern hemisphere. Most types of juniper are more like low shrubbies. But they are more likely to be tree-sized in Eurasia. Like, not over here in North America.
Gotcha.
There are actually some species of juniper that are present in the Himalayas, and it creates one of the highest tree lines on Earth. So, a little bit on the hardier side, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
Most gin is made from Juniperus communis. And although other subspecies exist, which are typically on the small side, Juniperus communis is one of the most widespread varieties in the world. It can live up to 200 years. And they are dioecious, which means that each tree is male or female. And then they cross-pollinate, and that's how you get more. The leaves kind of tend to be like a greenish-gray color, and the berries are green before maturing to a purplish-blue. But something you may not know is that juniper berries are not actually berries.
What are they?
I know. I just blew your mind, and you're really curious. But they're female seed cones, but they have unusually fleshy and merged scales that give them the appearance of a berry. So they're actually like cones, like pine cone kind of deal, but instead they look like berries.
I wonder why that evolved that way.
Never can quite tell with nature. And also they're unusual because, so the process of pollinating them is that the pollen of the male shrub can travel on the wind over 100 miles.
Helpful.
to reach a female. And then once pollinated, the berries take 2 to 3 years to mature.
Yowza.
So it's not quite as simple as, like, you know, we pollinate, we propagate, we get all over the place. Like, not for juniper berries. And so that also makes harvesting them difficult, because the process usually causes a single plant to hold berries of varying ripeness. And that means that a single plant has to be picked a few times a year. You don't really know how much you're going to get every time, because it's kind of an unpredictable process. And it's because that this process is difficult and also time-consuming that it's usually done by individual people who go out and harvest them from the wild. So pickers will usually place like a basket or a tarp beneath a branch and then just whack that branch with a stick to try and dislodge ripe ones. And then they're placed in like a cool, dark area to dry, because if you tried to dry them in the sun, it would suck up all the moisture and therefore like take away all the essential oils and tastes that juniper has. And clearly you don't want them to get wet, because then they'd get moldy.
That's right.
And juniper berries are actually one of the only conifers that we use as a spice. It's kind of the only one, but there are some, you know, like borderline things that people consider spices. But juniper is really the one conifer that we use as a spice, which is pretty interesting. I think it's also important to note that junipers, in general, first made an appearance around the Triassic period, which is 250 million years ago, and that's probably why you can find them in such a kind of wide area of the world. Like, just the Northern Hemisphere is a pretty big area, and, you know, back then we had Pangaea and stuff, so it makes sense that, you know, they broke off, and some of them have kind of subspecies, but some of the major players have managed to stick it out for a long time. And like I said, although, you know, we're giving credit of kind of gin to Franciscus, we also know from the Greek physician Galen, writing in the 2nd century AD, that juniper berries were used medicinally, primarily to cleanse the liver and kidneys and thin bodily fluids. So people have had juniper in their sights for a while. And I think it's also important to note that while the doses in the juniper berry used for gin is usually okay, you'd have to eat a lot to make yourself sick, and it'd have to be the straight berry. There are types of juniper that are toxic. So, like, I do not recommend just going and eating juniper berries. Also, juniper on its own is a very strong taste. Eclectic taste? I don't know. But there are toxic junipers, such as, like, the Savin juniper, the ash juniper, and the redberry juniper. And we know those are toxic, but we haven't studied all the different types of juniper. So probably best to not just, you know, don't eat berries you don't know the identity of if you're outside. That's my recommendation.
That's a pretty consistent lesson in our shows.
Yeah, like, just don't eat stuff that you're not sure about, unless you're, like, with a professional.
All I can think of is, that's nightlock, PETA! Every time.
Oh, jeez, yeah. No, not great. Not great. But the history of gin as an alcoholic beverage is actually, all things considered, also relatively recent. You know, the Dutch were drinking gin as a spirit by the time they revolted against Spain in 1566, which was a conflict that lasted in different forms, not always like all-out war, but until 1648. So, you know, it at least goes back that far. And during this time, again, British soldiers, you know, always getting their mitts and stuff.
Sure.
were sent to help aid the Dutch, and they would drink gin on the battlefield and called it Dutch courage. You drink the gin, you run out into the battle.
Yep.
Maybe you die, maybe you don't. Who knows? But by 1639, the English had gotten a taste for the juniper-based spirit, and juniper kind of started to appear in English distiller recipes. So we weren't quite full on, you know, making gin yet at that point, but it was starting to appear, starting to become popular. And then in 1689, William of Orange ascended the throne and was then in control of England, Ireland, and Scotland. And he was a man of Dutch origin. When I say that, it feels like I'm not referring to him as a person.
But like an object?
Yeah, but he probably deserves it. I don't know. Some of the upper class ended up kind of adopting the drink to show solidarity with him. And this also started to become more popular a beverage because he started imposing taxes on the French to implement these kind of like trade war tactics. And so he put taxes on brandy and wine, and then he also introduced tax breaks on spirit production. So if you were making a spirit locally, now you were getting a tax break. And this was also a time where, for the most part, people could make alcohol unlicensed and not really have to worry about suffering any ill effects for themselves. And that turned out to be very dangerous for the English, especially as it started to happen that a pint of gin was actually cheaper than a pint of beer.
Wow.
And so people were making gin. People were making gin in their homes and selling whatever they made. And this led to just like a huge overindulgence in gin. So a lot of people started selling their homemade gin just like out on the streets. And there's one man named Jared Brown, and he actually refers to it as the gin and gingerbread phenomenon, which is a name that I liked.
So I like that as well.
Yes. And it began kind of around 1731. So when the weather turned cold, people would go walk around the River Thames, where these kind of like home brewers would set up tents and stalls and sell hot gin and gingerbread in what became known as the London Frost Fairs. And so these fairs were kind of frequented by, you know, like lower middle class and lower class people, and they could get cheap gin and, you know, inexpensive baked goods. And yeah. Honestly, that sounds like a party to me.
It does.
I'm not too upset about it, but unfortunately, many of these unregulated gins were not necessarily made properly and contained ingredients like sulfuric acid or turpentine or sawdust. Why? Don't
to
know.
To do what?
Maybe they thought it was flavoring it. I'm not sure, but you know, when things go unregulated, people do whatever they need to do, but what that resulted in was just people began going crazy or just straight up dying.
Yep.
Yeah, they were, you know, really not in a great place. And one of probably the most famous kind of pieces of this time is that in 1736, along with an article that he'd written about the issue, William Hogarth made a series of famous etchings. And they depicted the differences between, quote, Beer Street and, quote, Gin Lane. So on Beer Street, everyone looked, you know, like happy, jolly drinkers. Woo, yay, look at me drinking my beer. And then on Gin Lane, things were just, like, going crazy. Like, in the depiction, there's, like, a man, like, with a baby on a spear, like, chugging a drink. There's, like, people covered in syphilis sores. There's a woman who's just, like, tossing her baby over the staircase.
Of course.
And so Jin kind of started to become, like, a little bit demonized in a way. Not quite in the way that Absinthe was, but because this alcohol was so unregulated, it was just causing this huge problem. And, like, people were legitimately losing their minds because people were just putting whatever the heck in this alcohol. And it was so cheap that people weren't even, you know, questioning it.
Mm-hmm.
There are stories of kind of crazy things happening. So one example that I found was this woman named Judith Dufour, who was a silk spinner, and she was supposedly driven so mad by this gin addiction that she took her 2-year-old daughter to a field with a friend, and they removed all the toddler's clothes and then abandoned her in a ditch, and then sold the clothing for money to purchase a small amount of gin. And
woof.
The child died, and her mother was sentenced to death by hanging. So, I mean, I don't know if that story is true, but you can imagine that if stories like that were circling around, that there were some people who started to think gin was this, like, really lower class, like, thing that you shouldn't involve yourself in, kind of, you know, the way people view drugs and other things now.
Right.
So, in 1751, they turned around and went from, like, not licensing or worrying about anything to just, like, heavily licensing gin. And they even had a reward, like, from the government for ratting out illegal gin distillers. And I think it was, like, €5 or something. Or, you know, I don't remember what, 5 shillings or whatever. I don't know what the right thing is. But it was a decent amount of money for that time. And so people did it. Beer and tea were heavily promoted as alternatives. There were a few gin distilleries that were able to persevere and kind of continue making gin. But for a long time, because of this, gin wasn't really popular anymore. Kind of understandably. And it wasn't until a new still by the French-born Irishman, whose name I know I'm gonna butcher, named Aeneas Coffee? Kofi? I don't know. Something like that. In 1830, he revolutionized liquor production with this really great still that was able to produce much cleaner and purer alcohols than people had been able to do before. And that meant that gin was able to be much purer a spirit. And that's around the time that gin really started to become something closer to what we drink as gin today. And it really kind of brought gin back into the picture. So then when we're talking about, you know, the British, I feel like you always kind of have to talk about their navy a little bit, because their, you know, imperialistic ideas was kind of like the driving force behind their nation a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so at one point, you know, they had a lot of sailors who were going over to India, because India was kind of the crown jewel of colonization for them at the time. And one of the big problems was that there were a lot of cases in India of people getting malaria. At the same time that is kind of starting to happen, the Spanish are hanging out in Peru, and they realize that while their people are dying of malaria, the native peoples are not. And at first they kind of think it's just because they're immune, but then they figure out that there is a tree there where they're ingesting the bark, and it's not only preventing them from getting malaria, but it is also curing the symptoms if they do get it. And so naturally they had to take that. The Spanish had to take that, because why wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Spanish. And then they, like, the local people really tried to hide it from them, but eventually they were able to get a hold of it. And so it was called quinine. And initially they would grind the bark into a powder and ingest it, but it was horribly, horribly bitter. Just gross. They started trying to make it more palatable by mixing the powder in sugar water. And those kind of became the first tonic waters. And then eventually, Schweppes introduced an actual tonic water in 1870. And it targeted those who lived in India who were prone to these malaria infections. Sailors added the lime for their travels, and then they could go back and forth, you know, to and from India and not have to worry about getting malaria. And that's what actually created the gin and tonic. But it also kind of did give it, especially the gin and tonic in general, this reputation of being like a healthy drink.
Right. It's the botanicals. They're good for you.
Exactly. So that's what I have to say to you about gin and tonic today. Very interesting. I don't know. Part of me kind of thought that the history of this beverage would be a little bit deeper, you know? But it's not. I want one of our alcohols to be like so old. I guess technically the one is beer, or maybe when we get to wine.
I mean, we've had a couple that, like, when we looked at origins, like the brandies and stuff, they got pretty old.
I guess that's true.
I mean, written history is only so well maintained.
It's true. I just want to be, like, sitting in my room drinking something ancient and or classy. I'm working on the absinthe fountain, guys.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's take a walk over to the bar and learn some more about some gin drinks, Krista.
Hello, friends. Today, we are talking about the historical gin fizz. You might have heard of it. The fizz is a school of cocktail that features a spirit alongside a citrus, sugar, and sparkling water. And a fizz often also contains egg white. I wanted to bring it up because I feel like a lot of people don't explore egg white drinks. And this is a classic one. The first printed recipe for a gin fizz appeared in 1876. The most famous gin fizz variation is the Ramos gin fizz, which also includes a heavy cream and orange flower water. There's also the slow gin fizz. So slow gin is going to be more of a tart, berry-flavored gin. And it doesn't usually have the egg white if you're kind of weirded out by that part. So, gin fizz, you're going to have gin, lemon juice, simple syrup, and an egg white. And for those of you who are like, I don't do stuff with food, what do? You crack the egg over a container, a separate container. I've taught a lot of people this, gotta be specific in your directions. And then you just try to pour the yolk in between the broken eggshells and let the egg white part drip into the cup. That's what you need. Put that in the shaker. Vigorously dry shake. That means no ice for about 15 seconds. That's a lot of shaka 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 shaka. You know, you get it. Then you'll add in some ice cubes. Shake vigorously again. my rule of thumb is if your fingers are getting too cold, then it's well chilled. Then you're gonna double strain it, and then you top it off with some club soda. Now, when you're picking out your gin, here are some notes on categories. You got your London Dry, so that's like Beefeater, Tanqueray, Bombay Sapphire, which ties into our India thing. I don't actually know the origin of Bombay Sapphire, but
probably. But it seems relevant.
It seems relevant. So that's going to be mostly a juniper taste with like bright citrus flavors. Then you got Plymouth, which is not just a single brand, but actually a whole category. I didn't know. flavor-wise, it's drier than London Dry and more citrus forward. You might get like a spicier finish. They have like a classic 7 botanical blend. And then Old Tom, which is my personal favorite. It's richer in flavor than London Dry. The botanicals are usually distilled, and then the sweetness in it normally comes from like a larger amount of licorice, which is something that's typically, it's not like a crazy thing to be in the botanical combo. And it doesn't taste like licorice, but it does add a layer of sweetness to it. And some of them are also aged in barrels, which I think is kind of cool for a gin, bringing in that caramel color. And then there's the Genever, the original style of gin, dating back to 16th century Holland. So this is base grains that are malted, similar to whiskey. It's giving it like a more robust flavor, even richer than the Old Tom. So like you said, this is probably the one that like people are drinking just straight.
Yeah.
So pick out your favorite, try making a gin fizz, go crazy, you know?
Try something new. That's what we're here to do.
I made an interesting mix of London Dry with apple cider. It's pretty nice.
Sadly, I could not partake in such a drink, but it does sound good.
What are we going to talk about in our next episode?
Next time, I think we're going to take a dive into vodka. And I think might be a long episode, so... Might be, might not. You know what? I don't even know anymore. But sometimes, guys, when I dive in, I can't stop. And then I've got to edit myself down.
Well, vodka is one of those interesting ones that, like, there's a lot of base plants that it could be made from.
Yes.
So.
So I'm sure there will be lots of interesting things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll try to pick out some of the major players.
Yeah, like Grey Goose.
I was not necessarily thinking of brands. I just meant plants that go into alcohol, but yeah.
I was thinking of brands for like examples of, you know, what they make theirs from.
And that's why you're here, Krista.
I've learned of a lot of random funny things about vodkas. Like some brands will distill them through diamonds. I don't know that that makes any difference, but they do it.
But it costs a lot of money, that liquor.
Yep, sure does.
All right, well, thanks for joining us, everyone.
Also, wanted to share that we recently hit 3,000 downloads. Yay!
3,000 downloads.
The modern, the old, and the crazy in between. We're
keep
doing
sharing,
it.
Keep sharing. Keep liking our pages. Keep forcing other people to like our pages.
I'm looking forward to us hitting 5,000 downloads.
We'll have to do something to celebrate.
Probably drink absinthe.
Probably.
We'll just do an Instagram live of us in a fireplace. Not in a fireplace, but in front of a fireplace.
And surrounded by plants drinking absinthe.
Yeah, and it'll just be us, like, picking up plants and talking about them. That sounds fun.
It does.
I'm gonna wear, like, a really nice suit.
I'm gonna gonna wear a cute dress.
Perfect.
Well, we'll see you all next week.
Bye!